Welcome back to the Green Front. And as you heard at the top of the hour in the Green News Report, there is a climate conference going on, yet another one, the United Nations Environment Program issuing a report about melting permafrost and what that is going to mean in terms of all the additional methane and carbon dioxide that's being emitted from the ground if the permafrost continues to melt. And it is, of course, melting much faster than even scientists had predicted. There is this feedback loop problem, and of course we have ice sheets melting everywhere, rising seas happening, and there is now a new documentary out called Chasing Ice that is really riveting. I haven't seen it yet. I can't wait to see it. I've seen trailers. I've heard about it. Most dramatic of all, I just saw a clip of a woman who had just seen the film, I guess in the last couple of days, and someone captured her thoughts, her comments on videotape, and we're going to play them in just a few minutes. But I first want to welcome to the program, very proud to have the producer and director of Chasing Ice, Jeff Orlowski, with us. Welcome to the Green Front, Jeff.
Thank you so much, Betsy.
Really excited to see the film. I'm sorry I haven't had a chance to see it yet. Lots to do to prepare for today's show, but I am going to watch it actually this evening and talk about it on a television interview that I'm doing tomorrow, because I get excited about things that change minds, change hearts, and change lives. Give us a little bit of background on this film, then we'll play a little clip from the movie itself and then some of the reaction to it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting because people are talking about it a lot in terms of how Chasing Ice is having this impact and how it's shifting opinion. And we're very, very thrilled by that, of course. But that wasn't the intention going into this. We weren't trying to make a political movie. We weren't trying to make a movie that was going to change minds and opinions. We were really trying to capture this photographer James's story. He's a phenomenal photographer. He was doing an assignment for the New Yorker magazine, and he went to Iceland, and he discovered that these glaciers were changing. And he used to be a skeptic about climate change many years ago, and he was thinking about the issue for a long time, and he didn't have a way to photograph it or represent it. And on that assignment, he came up with an idea to do time lapses of glaciers. And he created this project called the Extreme Ice Survey. And we followed him. I had the good fortune of joining him on the very first trip to Iceland in 2007. And we kept going back. We went to Greenland. We went to Alaska. We installed these time lapse cameras all around the world. And James's intention was really just to create an artistic representation of what's happening to the glaciers, you know, how are they changing, how are they evolving, and to document that with the photographic record. And then he's coming at this project from a very different perspective. He was trained in science, but he's not, you know, a formal scientist. And he really wanted to create something new that separated away from the debate and the media and, you know, people going back and forth. So that's really where the project started. And as we kept following James and as we kept traveling around the world, we were discovering just how fast these glaciers were, in fact, changing, faster than the scientists were expecting. And the time lapses were showing us incredible images of how quickly these landscapes have been evolving. And so that really was where the project started. And we were just thrilled to have the opportunity to capture James' story and to put it in the film.
And it does sound so exciting and so transformative, and it's kind of ironic, of course, and maybe that's where your title came from, Chasing Ice, the thought of, you know, capturing ice melting is sort of like, you know, watching a turtle fall.
Right.
but yet, given what it portends and what it symbolizes and what it actually captures, is worth more than 1,000 words, more than 1,000 conversations
right.
of trying to convince people that something real is happening. I want to bring my co-host, D.R. Tucker, on. He's joining us now, Jeff, just for your information. D.R. is a former climate convert who had his eco-epiphany when he read the IPCC report from 2007
Great.
And went from being politically
That's
a conservative Republican to a moderate because of what he learned about climate change and what he had heard from his, you know, conservative and libertarian friends.
Right.
Once he realized that was a lie, he started questioning a lot more.
Oh, great.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Jeff. How are you doing? Thank you so much for joining us, and great job with the documentary. You mentioned that it was not intended to be a political documentary, but obviously, seeing as how the political climate has gone back and forth on this issue, have you already been attacked for this by the usual suspects who are obsessed with convincing?
That's
a surprise.
Yeah, that's a great question, and we've had basically no attack from, you know, from the conservative media that typically, you know, doesn't acknowledge the reality of climate change. And this, you know, this is not a political film. It's a shame that it's been turned into a political issue, really.
Mm-hmm.
We try and frame it as very politically neutral because climate change will affect all future generations, all future, you know, civilization. Before the film came out, there were two negative blog posts about the film, about the whole subject being a hoax, et cetera. And then once the film came out at Sundance, there's not been a single negative, blog post or review of the film just acknowledging the scientific reality of it. When you do look at some of the videos or things online, in the comments section, that's where you find a lot of people who clearly haven't seen the film yet, who are making comments about, oh, this is, you know, it's a joke, it's not happening, et cetera, et cetera. But there's been no attack from the traditional news outlets that don't, you know, haven't really acknowledged the realities of climate change. And I don't know. You know, that's something where we're not explicitly trying to provoke a debate with any of that. We really just want the film to speak for itself. We want people to watch the film, see the images, see the time lapses, see what we've captured, and make their own decision. And if you still think that, you know, after seeing the imagery that we've collected, if you still think that climate change isn't happening, or if you still think that it's not man-made, that's somebody's assessment for them to make. But that's not what the scientists are telling us, and that's what we're really trying to show.
Okay, let's play a clip, an excerpt from the movie, before we then get some of the reaction to it. This is from the new documentary,
sure.
Chasing Ice.
I'm on the phone with Jim on one of our regular check-ins. Jim, nothing's happening.
It's starting, Adam, I think. Adam, it's starting.
Look at that. Look at the whole thing.
It all started in Iceland.
I think I'm so certain to get wet, I'll take my boots off.
I never imagined that you could see glaciers this big disappearing in such a short time. There's a powerful piece of history that's unfolding in these pictures, and I have to go back. The initial goal was to put out 25 cameras for 3 years, shoot every hour as long as it was daylight, that would show you how the landscape was changing.
Oh, this is the way to travel, my friend.
Putting really delicate electronics in the harshest conditions on the planet.
It's not the nicest environment for technology.
I do not want to go any lower than this. It's just bottomless. I'm going out here on this broken fin, and I assume it won't collapse.
Every once in a while, you get sane. What were you thinking? Maybe that office job wasn't so bad.
This thing is loose. Rock!
It's not working.
God,
all of that obsession means nothing if it doesn't work.
Just be careful. Don't get too close to the edge, all right?
This is terrifying.
His knee has had two surgeries, and it really could use a third.
We go to that point where he can't anymore, and sometimes he's going further.
We have low oil pressure in engine number two.
This is big stuff happening right now.
Okay, onward.
This is the memory of the landscape. That landscape is gone. It may never be seen again in the history of civilization, and it's stored right here.
That's funny. I don't think I've ever just listened to the trailer like that. But I think it does convey, obviously we can't see any of the photographs or the quotes that are in the trailer, but I think it conveys the adventure and the excitement of what this project was like, even when you just listen to the trailer.
Well, I get goosebumps when I listen to the trailer, but not nearly as many goosebumps as I get when I saw this next clip, which we're going to listen to, but just wanted to make a comment. Inconvenient Truth and Island President, about the presidents of the Maldives Islands, what they're going through
right.
with climate change, those, you know, greener films tend to be seen by those of us who are green-minded, you know, the choir, if you will, environmentalists
right,
and activists
right.
and progressives. Mm-hmm. Somehow, this woman you're about to hear got herself to this film, and she's not in that category whatsoever. That has changed.
Let me preface it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, let me just preface it, because people have been asking about this woman, and what we learned is that she went to go see the film because she thought she was going to be there for a good laugh. She would sit through the whole film and just kind of laugh and heckle at it and chuckle, I guess. But she's a Fox News watcher, and I guess you'll hear the rest from the clip.
Yeah, let's listen to her words. There's nothing quite like it. The drama is evident. Go ahead.
Let me say what I have to say. That I watch Bill O'Reilly every day. I love Bill O'Reilly. I'm proud to be an American. but I saw this movie, Chasing Ice, today. And it hasn't just changed me about global warming. It has changed me as a person. And there is something, I don't know what I can do. I'm 60 years old, but there must be something I can do to help this, to help our children, to help my grandkids. But I'm going to change it because this movie was fantastic. Every human being in this world should watch this movie. Everyone.
And you didn't believe in global warming?
I did not believe in global warming. I'm going to be 60 on December 21, and every time someone mentioned global warming to me, I told them if they wanted to remain in my home, they needed to step out, because I said it was bullshit. I didn't believe it. Excuse my language. And that is because I listen, and I believe. This is the truth. I believe Bill Riley.
And now you saw this movie.
And I saw this movie. And I apologize to anyone I ever talked to not into believing there was no global warming. I have talked to every friend, every person I know into believing there is no global warming. And now I have to undo my damage. And I will. But the moment I go to my car, go home, go to my computer, it has changed my life.
Wow, that's great. That's
thank
really
you.
Cool.
I thank you for giving me this moment. It was a great movie.
Okay, thank you.
And we apologize. It's a little bit hard to hear her partly because she's outside a movie theater and there's street noise in the background,
right.
Partly because she's actually, when you see the video, you see that she's crying and then choking on her words and is just really, really struggling to express her, you know, shock and you know,
right.
Repenting and calling herself out, saying not only was I wasn't just a skeptic, I was an active denier. I would, you know, call out my friends who did believe. I would, you know, sort of torment them and browbeat them into, you know, listening to me when I said it's not real. And she's saying, oh my God, was I wrong? And I'm going to go home and immediately start, you know, reversing the damage. Well, that obviously is very powerful.
Right. She, we've been in touch with her just recently, and that happened on Sunday when she saw the film in Los Angeles, and she forwarded to us an email that she wrote to all of her friends, you know, saying a lot of the same stuff that we just heard, but really apologizing to all of her friends for being so adamant and so, you know, headstrong about the issue, and she's been starting to send us some of the responses from her friends as well, and it's really incredible to see the impact that it's had on this woman's life and how she's completely shifted gears. You know, from it's a 75-minute film. You know, from that 75-minute experience, we've seen that people are recognizing the reality of climate change in a way that, you know, I've never heard really happen from, you know, from debates or from you know, any other kind of media in that capacity. So, we've really just been humbled by the response to the film.
I would love to get her on the program soon to interview her. What kinds of responses is she getting from her friends? I'm just curious as to whether, you know, they're, you know, discounting it or they're saying, wow.
No, I think it's the latter. I've only seen a couple of the emails thus far, but it was really just the mindset of people appreciating the fact that she recognized her mistake in this, and that she's, you know, that she's come around and supporting her in that, and just being really, really thrilled that she's coming out and speaking about it. So,
DR, I'm sure this is resonating with you.
It's a testament. First of all, it is a testament to the power of film to change people's opinions. I'm listening to the clip again. I recall when I saw what something that is not a documentary film, but nevertheless, the movie Traffic with Michael Douglas, and how that movie single-handedly changed the way I thought about the war on drugs. But listening to her and realizing, you know, my takeaway from that is that experience might be more powerful than the experiences of all the people who realized that Fox News was deceiving them into believing that Romney would win the election. How that one little bit, that one little slice of reality breaks the fantasy apart, and it's just a fascinating thing to see and to hear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Interesting observation. This is going to be playing where, and we're going to do everything we can to promote it, but what kinds of theaters is it opening in? How many areas, and what can people do if they want to help get people
Absolutely.
To the theaters?
So we're in that independent film category, you know, and it's been really, really tough to not only make the film with friends and family support, but getting it out there and getting it distributed. So we're doing a lot of our own kind of grassroots work to get the film out there. And we've been really blown away and fortunate that the film has had opportunity to screen in all the big markets, all the big cities right now. So we're mostly in the independent theaters. And so in the Bay Area, we're playing in San Francisco at the Embarcadero Center, and we're playing in Berkeley at the Landmark California Theater, and it opened I believe last weekend in both of those cities, and it's going to continue as well. And if anybody wanted to see the list of screenings all around the country, our website is chasingice.com, and all the screenings and showtimes are listed there, and it's sorted by state and city, so you can see where you can, you know, get tickets immediately. It's still in LA and New York, all the big cities. And we've been doing a lot of Q&As. I don't think we have any Q&As coming up in San Francisco this weekend, but we have more Q&As happening in L.A. and San Diego and in Boulder and Denver with our team. So we've really just trying to get the word out there about the film.
And you couldn't ask for a better build-up than Hurricane Sandy in terms of, you know, Mother Nature making it very clear that this is not just happening, you know, this melting ice off there, out there someplace with no impact,
right,
other than,
yeah,
on penguins and polar bears, but
exactly,
actually has hit our shores.
The timing is very interesting. And people for years, when we were editing the film and sending it to friends and getting feedback, people kept asking us, so what if it, like, why does it matter? Why should I care about ice melting thousands of miles away from me? You know, it has no impact on my life. And based on all the feedback from people, we actually added a scene in the film of the consequences of climate change. The opening scene to Chasing Ice, actually the very, very first shot, is of a house being washed away by floodwater.
Mm-hmm.
And the opening sequence is the fact that there is this debate going on, and that the left and right are having almost this childlike debate about whether it's happening, whether it's real, he said, she said kind of stuff. And in and amongst all of that, we are seeing, you know, wildfires, we're seeing droughts, we're seeing hurricanes, and we're seeing storms happen at unprecedented rates. And later in the film, we talk about the fact that in North America, in the United States, there's been a fivefold increase in natural disasters over the last 30 years. And the scientists, and not just the scientists, but the insurance companies, are not only attributing it to man-made climate change, but they are saying that this is a real significant threat, that it has major financial implications. I mean, we look at the cost of what Sandy costs, you know, the Northeast, $30 billion to New York alone. The estimates I hear are 50 and up for the damage that it's caused. There was a statistic from this summer that climate change has cost the global economy $1.2 trillion in the last year. Trillion with a T. And that was before Sandy even happened. So when we talk about, you know, what's the cost of climate change, those numbers are very, very significant. But the issue is that we don't pay for that through buying gas at the pump. We're paying for that through taxpayer dollars and the countries that are having to support the consequences of climate change. But that's one of the, you know, we don't get into this in the film. It's something that our whole team has learned a lot about, and people keep asking their questions in the Q&As. That have kind of sparked these additional thoughts, but it is a significant issue in terms of the consequences and natural disasters.
Well, mentioning the cost reminds me of, you know, another aspect of this disconnect. We were just back east, I mentioned at the top of the show, traveling in New York and Connecticut and seeing all kinds of huge trees, you know, on their size with roots just sticking out, and all kinds of stories of people, you know, being without power, you know, for 7-8 days at a time. Still, you know, struggling and suffering there in parts. My friend who we were staying with in Westport, who is a dear friend, but, you know, when I started to talk about, you know, how my efforts are going to try to bring green consciousness into mainstream media and to the public, this is a 15-year effort. She knows me well and long. She said, but Betsy, people are just not going to pay attention as long as, you know, we have to focus on the economy. And I just, you know, put my hands in my hair and said, but... don't you see, this storm alone just added some $50 billion to our deficit. There's a tremendous economic cost in not doing anything. And there, so, you know, even among otherwise educated people, there's still a disconnect.
Right.
And we can only hope that with the record, you know, weather we saw in 2012,
right,
and,
exactly,
you know, efforts like yours, that people can no longer, you know, fail to connect the dots.
Yeah. People talk about it being, you know, they think it's a long-term problem that we have to deal with far in the future, that it's going to affect future generations that aren't even born yet. And we were very quickly seeing and realizing that that's not the case. It's happening right now, and we're living through the consequences of climate change right now. I just realized an analogy the other day that kind of, I think it helps put it in perspective a bit, because my grandmother was born and raised on Staten Island. I grew up on Staten Island. She'd had a house there for 50 years, and as a result of Sandy, it was flooded for the first time, you know, water up to the mailbox. And in my grandmother's lifetime, sea level has risen 8 inches around the planet on average. So you're talking about an 8-inch rise in my grandmother's lifetime. The subject of the film, James, he's got a young daughter, and in her lifetime, sea level will rise another 3 to 6 feet. So we're talking about a 5-fold to 10-fold increase in sea level rise over her generation, over her lifetime, compared to my grandmother's lifetime. The consequences of that are huge. Like the consequences of another, the scientists are saying 2 meters on the upper end, and some of those estimates are actually being considered low-ball estimates now. But the consequences to that sea level rise, it doesn't require, you know, 6 feet of ocean rising to affect 6 feet of the shore. The problem is when those big storms happen, that they are much, much stronger, much more powerful. There's a lot more volume of water that is now being thrown around in the storm. And the water is warmer, so the storm conditions get worse as well. So all of these are these positive feedback cycles that have huge, huge implications.
Mm. DR, you probably want to weigh in, and then I have another question.
Sure. Jeff, with all the attention being paid to the film, to the documentary, it calls to attention again what something that Betsy and I have been discussing for a long period of time now, which is sort of the imbalance and the sort of, you know, lack of coverage in mainstream media, and this includes the entertainment industry as well, and also documentaries, of the issue. And what do you think accounts for this? Because you'd figure that after the success of Inconvenient Truth, as after the relative success of 11th Hour and similar documentaries, there would be more in this nature and more in mainstream media and more in mainstream television, radio, and what have you, and yet the coverage is nowhere near where it needs to be.
Yeah. No, it's very true. And, I mean, obviously, Inconvenient Truth did incredible things for raising the awareness of the issue. I really think that the core problem is that, you know, our American political system and our media system typically can't think beyond an election cycle. Like, they think, you know, our world runs on election cycle to election cycle, and it's only the topics that are, you know, really, really pertinent to the American population at the time that seem to get any sort of attention. Meanwhile, you have countries like Holland, who they have dikes that are built to protect their country for 10,000 years of storm events, because they're underwater and they recognize that, you know, that's a long-term strategy that's important to them. And because of the increase in natural disasters and the rise of sea level, they're retrofitting their you know, barrier system to protect against 100,000-year floods. You know, we can't even get, like, if they were to debate what they would do for prevention in New York City for upcoming floods, they wouldn't even be able to think to protect against a 100-year event. You know, the difference in long-term strategy and long-term thinking and how our government seems to work and how other governments seem to work is very, very different in terms of the long-term planet.
Well, we fault the government, but we also fault the right-wing media because, you know, they are dominating talk radio, 95% last time I checked, right-wing, you know, hosts and topics. And they, as recently as Hurricane Sandy, Rush Limbaugh is mocking, you know, those who are concerned about climate change. I think they should be knocked off the air. I mean, if nothing else, regardless of whatever other hot air they spew, this hot air is just unacceptable, especially given, you know, their huge ratings, their, you know, ridiculous impact, inexplicable to me, and their enormous salaries. I mean, enough already.
I hear you on that, and my perspective is slightly different. As opposed to them being knocked off the air, I would much rather they recognize the reality of climate change and for them to come out just like this woman did. And I think that the future, here's what my core belief is right now. I think the future generations are going to look back at this era in a similar way to how we look back at slavery. We look back at slavery and think this was completely immoral. How could we have done it? But of course we moved beyond it. But the reality is back then, it was our economic engine. It's how companies made money. They, you know, they had free sources of labor, and that's what the entire economy was based on. And companies said, how can you take away our slaves? How can you take away our livelihood? You're going to destroy the economy. And we are facing a similar ethical transition right now, where we recognize that the continuation of burning fossil fuels has major consequences, not to the environment, not to the planet, to human lives and human livelihood within our societies, within modern civilization. We are more dependent on nature than we tend to think. You know, growing up in New York City, we think we're completely isolated. You know, we don't have any real connection to our natural surroundings. And I think that future generations are going to look back and recognize that we either made the right moral and ethical decision and moved away from this system that we're effectively slaves to fossil fuels right now. And either we moved forward or we stuck stagnant and we let, you know, the industries that are influencing this, you know, have very, very negative impact on the future of human civilization. I think that it's an opportunity right now more than anything. It's an opportunity for Republican leaders to recognize that the science is really, really solid. I fully acknowledge that 20 years ago there was active debate, there was skepticism about this issue. You know, the idea of whether or not burning carbon would lead to greenhouse gases, burning greenhouse gases would lead to the warming of the planet, that wasn't really solidified for quite a while. But the science is so rock solid on it now. I think that there's an opportunity for Republican leadership to step up and say the science is here. We recognize what these implications are, and for the future of humanity, for the future of our children, our grandchildren, we need to act. And those leaders are going to be looked back at as the heroes, the individuals who stuck their neck out and helped our society move forward. I think we need the support of Fox News to get that message out there. I think that when, you know, people like this woman who came and saw the film and openly acknowledged, I was wrong, I'm changing my stance, I recognize what's going on now, that's what we need to make a difference.
Absolutely, but don't forget the power of the fossil fuel industry and the Koch brothers to obfuscate and confuse anyone who is willing to be confused. And I think we should make this film required viewing for any legislator, anyone who wants to lead our country, and any you know, right-wing talker who has an opinion on this. You know, watch an Inconvenient Truth, which they never do. Watch this film, and then talk about your cognitive dissonance. Talk about you know, how you feel about what you just saw. And I would love to hear what they'd say, but they never see that.
Absolutely, I agree. Well, the thing is, you know, some people, I've heard on the festival circuit, I've heard of some people who said that they didn't see Inconvenient Truth because it was associated with Al Gore.
Right.
And yet they came and they saw Chasing Ice because they were expecting pretty pictures and they heard it was a beautiful film with, you know, great photography and it was a great adventure. And I'm fine with people coming in and seeing the film for whatever reason or motivation that they have. I gladly, we want everybody to see the film. I'd love to screen the film to the Koch brothers. I'd love to screen the film to Rush Limbaugh and John Hannity and get their response. You know, I think that hearing them, and I honestly just want an open dialogue and an open conversation with them. And I don't know, we'll see.
We'd love to see it, too. And a few times I've gone on Fox News to spar with Hannity, you know, I just say, how is it that you know more than 99% of the world's scientists? And they never answer that question directly, of course. They go off and start calling, you know, me a communist or something, Van Jones a communist. So it is ridiculous, but it's not funny anymore. It hasn't been for some time. And just want to thank you, Jeff, for your incredibly powerful contribution
to
this, you know, evolution
thank
of
you.
Our
yeah,
ego awakening. And I know it's going to be, you know, something that we're talking about for some time to come. Thanks so much for taking time on short notice to be on the show.
Absolutely.
I want to thank Aaron
Wasserman
for helping make this interview happen. And again, Jeff Orlovsky, producer and director of Chasing Ice. Go see it. Share it with your friends and share this link of this woman who is so choked up she can barely speak about what happened when she saw this film. You can find it on YouTube or go to Chasing Ice. They have it there on their website as well. That does it for this edition of The Green Front. Just back from the East Coast, where again saw so many signs of the hurricane, an appropriate show today as we reach the 1-month anniversary of Superstorm Sandy. Have a great Green Week.